Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
P3, Giannis, Coach Bud, we wanted to put everyone's legacies on the line, but as we head to Tuesday, the picture starts to get a little bit clearer on the haves and have-nots, on the people that are really going to be at the center of this conversation. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, who you guys see co-hosting Sports Nation on ESPN Plus all the damn time around here. It's a great time here. And our thanks to Sean Evans, who just joined us from Hot Ones, by the way. Trev, I'm still a little bit disappointed. I was sitting here during the break here. Sean Evans hosts a show where celebrities come and eat really hot wings with him.
Yep.
And usually break in the process. And my mouth is still watering because I was eating wings during the break. Him and the folks at Complex were kind enough to send us some sauces, and you still wouldn't budge. You were a man of principle.
Yeah, I am. I will hold to said principle of not being a masochist on air, right? Like, I'm gonna avoid that train altogether. I mean, you have one wing in front of you right now, and you said one of the sauces like just clears you out sinus wise, and look, I just hope for your safety. That's all I'm looking for.
Trev, like, you talk about not being a masochist. You're an Atlanta sports fan.
Okay,
this wing can do to my body that Atlanta sports hasn't already done to yours 10 times over.
Also, you sound kind of scared too, bro.
I'm
just put that out there. Openly said, I am terrified. Like, what more do you want me to do? Like, do you need me to say I'm scared time and time again? Because I am. I don't want it.
I mean, listen, Cliff, I didn't see you digging in the sauces in the hallway when we were during the break. So,
hey, look, you can't touch lemon pepper. You just got to keep it the way it is, bro. I don't want to mess it up with some sauces.
See, he's not even admitting to being a coward.
No, that's the truth. I can say he's trying to dodge that one real deftly right here. People don't forget, Cliff. That's all I'm going to say on this. People don't forget. Now, as far as what's at stake, as far as any of the ideas of judging legacies in this finals, I think this series is over, Trev. I don't know about you. I was a Suns and Seven guy at the beginning of this. I thought they came in the healthiest team in a postseason where that had mattered more than ever, I think, in the NBA. But you just look at this squad, and Giannis and the Bucks, he beat that knee injury in a way that I don't think any of us believed was physically possible. And on the other side, Chris Paul just has not been able to deliver anywhere close to the guy that we had sold as the difference maker on this team this postseason.
Drew Holiday put the straps on him. Like, I think that is, in effect, what happened there. I want to make sure I'm clear on something, though. When you say the series is over, are we saying Bucks winning regardless? Are we saying Bucks win this next game six at Tuesday in Milwaukee?
Oh, like, no, was blind, but now I see a Suns and Seven guy. Like, I have heard the Bucks and Six crowd, and I believe them. Like, okay. I don't think this thing makes it out of Milwaukee.
Okay, so that's where I'll end up pushing back then, because I want to be specific with where I push back. And not only because I had Suns and Six in my team, prediction, that I will own that for the initial matter here. But I just think that we saw, even in the last tilt, the first time that we had seen a lead change in the second half all series. There are certain things that have occurred throughout this series that have swung the pendulum of the crowd in one direction and back the other way in a matter of days. And with that understanding, I cannot rule out the possibility of that occurring once again when we're in Milwaukee and everything seems like it's going to go Milwaukee's way. Because that's exactly what we felt like after game two when it went back to Milwaukee. We expected Phoenix to go up 3-0, and we were going to put a bow on this series and start talking about legacies and also dynasties with the Phoenix Suns. And I'm just not all the way committed to the idea, because I'll go ahead and admit that also I think my pick was incorrect to begin with, and also the fact that I think the Bucks will eventually win it. But I'm not ready to just deem this series over based off of that one last game.
Is there one thing you saw from the last game that gives you hope on that front? Because that, to me, is the immediacy of this last game. Like, abandon all hope, ye who entered game five, where the Bucks were behind by 16 after the first quarter and still did not let them face it. Like, I get it's the NBA in 2021, and we see leads like that erased far more often than we used to. But I'm just looking over at that Suns team that had everything to play for at home there. I understand we talk about desperation driving some of these games. That was an even series heading into that game. You had home court advantage with a chance to continue to steer this thing, having that throughout, and they balked on it in a big way down that stretch that just lets me know, all right, we might have just maxed out this team's ability versus their counterpart.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, no, I didn't see anything that gave me hope that this could actually be extended. I'm just going off of, I don't know, what is the quote, faith is the evidence of things unseen? Like, that is what I'm stepping out on. Like, I'm not even going off of something that I have seen. It is just sort of, I can no longer predict this series So I am going to just say that if anything could happen, and yes, it may be frankly swayed by the idea that I picked the Suns.
I can understand why you would pick the Suns too. Chenan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. A lot of this goes back to the Chris Paul conversations that we had had, where in a backcourt that includes Devin Booker, who did a 40-point thing again in Game 5, like has been doing that, has been that guy, we still looked at Chris Paul and said, no, that's the important part of all this. And I thought Richard Jefferson summed this up really well. He joined the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning and said, what Chris Paul has been is good. That doesn't win you the thing here.
Chris Paul's one of the best point guards of this generation. He's one of the top, you know, point guards of all time. And I think he doesn't look like he's 100%. And I'm not going to make excuses for him. That 22-10 and only two turnovers, that's impressive. Chris Paul, that's a great game for you. If you're just talking about a first-round matchup, that's a great game if you're talking about a random Wednesday in March. But this is the NBA Finals, and you can't just be good or pretty good. You have to be great. And that's what he's been all postseason. And especially in the fourth quarter, especially late. And so if he doesn't kind of claim that, because lately that's been Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday time. That's that needs to be Chris Paul time. That's what he's done all postseason. That's what he needs to do. If he can do that and figure out a way to bring his team back and win this in seven, then I think people start to look at him a little bit differently.
And Trev, how would you look at Chris Paul after all of this then? If all of a sudden this is how he goes out, if this downward trajectory is the way we remember him from this finals?
I frankly would absolve him because I already had an understanding of what he was entering this series, entering this postseason run. Chris Paul was a brother that, as great as he was in pockets that we had seen, it was just going to be a thing that he may never achieve the Larry O'Brien peak, right? And that was fine with me because of what he had shown over his career as a point guard just skill-wise. I was good with that. The ring was essentially like an accentuation to anything that he had already built up for legacy. So I don't think that my view upon him changes much at all based on the results of this series because of what the resume had been to this point.
And I think for a lot of people, when they hear us have that, because I'm with you, I think we all had this handshake agreement at the beginning of the finals, right? That Chris Paul was sort of like a late career Peyton Manning in that Super Bowl with Denver wasn't going to really sway us one way or the other because we had so much resume to work with leading up to that point, such a big body of work. Then I'm reminded there was that clip that went viral of a strength coach, I forget from what school, that said, you've got to love the work because team sports especially are a spot where work doesn't guarantee you anything. There's no promised result at the end of that you get for a certain amount of work. And I always have to remind myself of that when we try to hold these guys, especially in a sport like basketball, where one of five, you can have a bigger impact than you can in a sport like football. But for Chris Paul, I don't think we'll think of him any differently as far as where he ranks all time, but I think this does cement the idea that he was just a guy whose body could not hold up for him in the ways he needed it to down the stretch. Because I'm like RJ, I'm not going to say he's hurt, but he doesn't look right.
Right.
Like the Chris Paul that we saw through the whole season, through this whole postseason run, he doesn't look like the guy that's been fumbling the bag late in the game the way he has time and time again at this point. And that, unfortunately, as a concrete part of your legacy as a player, that's got to be a tough thing for Chris Paul, the competitor, to have to stomach.
It was insane to see the amount of turnovers just jump through the roof in at the precipice of the series, right? Like, he was a guy who had zero turnovers in a 40-point performance, and all of a sudden he had 15 in games 2, 3, and 4 of this series. There was something that makes you raise an eyebrow at the very least. And I think the strength coach you're referring to is Georgia Tech, and it was the one that said, you have to sprint without knowing the distance, which I thought was also an unbelievable quote to sort of pull from when it comes to the pursuit of winning and championship lore. But all that to say, look, Chris Paul will be the guy that, like, it was just physically unsustainable. And I think what's also going to come to play is, like, his diminutive stature relative to his peers, right? Like, he's a guy that has always been seen as a guy that has been too small to get to where he was. And now that just sort of, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy almost that, like, his body just could not sustain what it took to get to that peak.
And it's a shame because Chris Paul, in so many ways, he's a tough one as a player because there's things he does on the court that annoy the hell out of a lot of people.
Yes.
There's what he represents off the court that's endearing to a whole lot of people. And so it's always been complicated with Chris on or off the court. But I think this only further adds to that entire complicated legacy here. Coming up next, though, as we look and try and shift things to what we've got coming up this fall of 2021. as we start to look down the road at the upcoming college football season here, what information are we getting about our priorities as we head into this second fall where the pandemic is still a factor? Next, you're on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. We'll head down to SEC Media Day with Greg McElroy in about 10 minutes here. Greg McElroy and Cole Kublik have a new morning show that's, I believe, on Sirius XM Radio, which is awesome. Two of the best guys covering the sport that we have. So excited to check in with Greg on that front. But Trevor Scales has watched me during the last break. We mentioned before, we had Sean Evans on from Hot Ones, the YouTube series, where they interview famous celebrities while eating really hot chicken wings. And we mentioned that the folks at Complex were kind enough to send us some of the sauces from season 15. And we didn't want to do the thing where we bite their swag at all and do like any part of the interview process eating the wings on there. Because that's, right. that's their thing. They right. got it. But I'm fat and curious. So I was like, I want to try some of the stuff. And I tried to do it during the last break. And I'm not going to lie. What they said, like about the middle of the scale here, this one was hotter than L.
Okay.
Was the name of the sauce. And that one watered the eyes a little bit. That one watered the eyes.
Yeah,
some,
just
Trev.
A tad bit, dog. Like, because I was watching you and in hopes that you weren't going to have to like leave me lonesome to do a solo segment, and I was concerned.
No, but, listen, like, I was going to tough that one out yeah. right here. I will say you called out our producer Cliff for not being down for the cause because you openly said you're scared of the heat.
Yeah,
Cliff walked into the kitchen with me, so I got to give him credit where it's due on that one, man. Cliff stepped up to the plate.
Applause, round of applause for the young
Cliff.
Man
how we feeling right now, man? Because you went with a lot more sauce than I did.
Good, yo. Honestly, it wasn't much. You know what I mean, nothing much to me.
I had
to
I
took one quick little bite. You know me. I'm used to the spicy foods. I'm Haitian. Shout out to my mom for, you know, hooking it up as I've been growing up. But, you know what I mean, quick little heat on the tongue and the nails.
Okay,
it.
But like, please explain to me why I heard somebody say you had tears in your eyes.
Because it heated up the tongue and it heated up my, like, it heats up the inside. So, okay. it's going to cause a little bit of tear action, but I wasn't like bawling my eyes out.
So.
That's it. Like, listen, we can own it, right? And I own the fact that I wasn't about it. Like, I fully embrace that fact.
I appreciate that about you, Trev. You were upfront about it. You knew your limits.
Yeah, man.
Which is a thing very few people in this life have an understanding of, is where they butt up against the bumpers in this lifetime game of bowling. So, well, I promise we have left that in the rearview mirror because I don't want any more of that smoke. I've taken my medicine for today. Trev, as we look at something that was certainly heating up the timeline today, anytime Cole Beasley has been trending lately, we know the conversation has gone decidedly down one road.
Left.
This time, Cole Beasley, the wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, who came out, went notes app on him last time, talking about why he wasn't going to get the vaccine for COVID-19 heading into the season, even as the NFL rolled out some pretty strict policies on what kind of access you'd have in the building, what you'd be allowed to do with your teammates. Were you a player who wasn't vaccinated? And are you a team that is below that 85% threshold that we've seen pop up in pro sports? Trev, what did you make of Michael Irvin, Hall of Fame wide receiver for the Cowboys, coming out and basically saying, if you're one of the teams below that 85% threshold and your leaders aren't in the locker room having questions for the commitment of that team to winning, then you're doing things wrong? Do you believe he was right to indict any of these teams as not wanting to compete for the top title? Bad enough.
Whether or not its morality is in the right place is one thing, but I honestly, the way I interpreted it, Mike, that was just him reiterating exactly what the league has made this about. We're going to make this a very clear football decision for y'all. If you want to be a part of this league in a very streamlined manner, it's about as close to normal as we can possibly get given the circumstances, then you will take the vaccine and you will go down this path. If you do not, then you will go about this in a much more challenging way. You will have to be beholden to certain thresholds that other teams, without these sort of lack of circumstances or sort of thresholds met, that you will have a much harder time, essentially, if you are not going about this the way that makes this process a lot easier for everyone involved.
Yeah, they made it a football decision.
Yeah.
Almost purely a football decision. You can say the same thing about the SEC, that when we heard from their commissioner, Greg Sankey, said, we're not going to have dates rescheduled if a team does not have enough healthy players to compete. And we've got, I think it was reported by someone at The Athletic, six of the 14 teams in the SEC above the 80% threshold that they need there. So this is in that spot again, because I said, I doubt Nick Saban and the Tide are one of those teams left out. I'm sure they're one of the six, because if this is made into a football decision by the rules people, most of the football people involved are wired to say, all right, I'm finding competitive advantage and I'm running for that.
That's exactly what this is going to boil down to, and I just find that unbelievable. Well, actually, I shouldn't say unbelievable, because it is completely believable given what we've kind of seen over the last year and change. But it is just fascinating, tremendously fascinating, to see that it is taken out of the idea of your livelihood being the primary thing at stake when it comes to us making these decisions. In this space particularly, it has become, do you want this carrot we're dangling in front of you? Well, all right, well, do these certain things and you'll get to the carrot. But no other logic of science or otherwise has been enough to entice people to get to this stage.
No, but we've seen sports, even going back to the beginning of all this, was something that last summer we talked about the importance of some of the SEC football coaches speaking up in areas where the vaccinations were happening at a lower level, or where the idea of that was received at a level that wasn't matched in other places here. Like, sports has always been a driver in society and in these kind of factors that far outpaces what it probably should be. But we know we've given it a ton of importance in this spot. And so now, looking at this, the idea that your livelihood or your performance on the field should usurp a decision made about your health is probably something that, either way, like, health should be at the forefront of this conversation when it comes to this. But it's been so caught up in all these other things, so politicized, that we've had to go now to making it a football conversation, making it a sports conversation, I guess, for people to have a better chance of understanding or wanting to play the game.
Yeah, we started to try to go about it in a simple manner. It then got convoluted and politicized, to your point. And then we're trying to resimplify it, but in a different area. And that is just a wild sort of train of logic to have to follow in order to get to thresholds that really should be easily attainable and really encouraging to meet.
Yeah, yeah, Cole Beasley quote tweeted that Michael Irvin conversation and said that's not what that means, the idea that if you're unvaccinated, you don't want to win badly enough. He said that's not what that means. You can be vaccinated and not do all the right things football-wise to be at your best. All it means is players are going to be out there with COVID and we won't know it because they only get tested once a week so the NFL can make their money. Now, the idea that the NFL and other sports leagues like the Olympics and the IOC are in this to make their money, 100% true.
Yes.
100% with you on that. The whole idea is minimizing risk. What he's talking about is minimizing that risk, and that's where the vaccine comes into play. I think we assume that if we're talking about this conversation, championship effort in the football sense is considered the baseline, and this is seen as an extension of that for a lot of people, and that's the part of this that really becomes the crux of the conversation, is now that is something that looks like this. I expected this conversation to heavily populate college football fan bases.
Yeah.
Where we're used to play, you know, fans feeling like they can control the bodies of players in so many other ways that it was, all right, well, this is what's expected for our team to go out there and win. And all of a sudden, if Tennessee doesn't beat Florida because of this, there's going to be hell to pay for it. I was a little more surprised that a veteran Hall of Fame wide receiver was the one that was bringing this logic to the party in such a way.
Well, there's also a note to understand, like, the agency of professional football players, where they are in a different stratosphere than the college players that are much more part of a faceless organization, a faceless institution, where Cole Beasley is Cole Beasley. Rapping Cole Beasley, right? All the things that we associate with him as an individual are things that set him apart from just about everybody else in the league. Now, this anti-vax campaign is another thing that sets him apart from everybody, but regardless, there is a level of agency that each one of these players are going to sort of flex and flaunt that college players may not necessarily feel comfortable doing so, even in the revolution of NIL.
Yeah, I think there's a different relationship entirely between the fan bases and the players in these spots, but there's no question it is going to govern, again, the outcome of some games that we see, because this is now going to be something that is treated very similar to any other injury that would take someone off the field. But how does that play in the world of college sports? Let's head down to the SEC Media Day and find out from Greg McElroy next here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Trev, I can't tell you a whole lot about making an NFL team, staying on it. That was unfortunately one of the things that evaded me during my, you know, few attempts at trying to get to that golden prize at the top of all this.
Same here, big dog. Same here.
I can tell you how to get cut, though.
Chinay
and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales here, former Notre Dame and Harvard footballers, respectively, here. Getting ready to talk to Greg McElroy in just here in a second from SEC Media Day. But did you see the quote from Byron Cowart, the defensive tackle out of Maryland that is, I believe, going into his third year for the New England Patriots, talk about Tom Brady and say, we're not welcoming back when he comes back to play in Foxborough here. This quote going all over ESPN and SportsCenter and everywhere is an indication that we need training camp to start. But, man, as a fifth-round draft pick, someone in that range there who's just, you know, going to probably be trying to make his way on here, that's not the place or the coach that I'm the one giving the quote to, right?
No. That's the one where we find, I don't care if you had one seminar about coach speak, you find something that is nothing to say, and you move on as much as you can, as quickly as you possibly can, because what you don't want to be is part of a headline.
No, not when Bill Belichick is your head coach. Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback here, and co-host of Mac and Cube, 7 to 10 a.m. weekdays on WJOX 94.5 FM, joining us here now on the Goodyear Hotline. Like, Greg, I'd have to imagine that the number one thing you lived in fear of as a Nick Saban player back in the day was making any sort of headline, right?
No, the goal was to, like, always be the story. You know, always just front and center, go scorched earth on the Hall of Fame quarterback that you're playing against. And surely that won't give him motivation, because if there's one thing we know about Tom Brady is he doesn't find additional motivation anywhere. Never. No, not him. If someone mentions avocado tequila this year, he's going to throw for 420. All right. So I think that was a dangerous game by Byron Cowart, though. But you're right. No, Nick Saban would not have put up with that, would not have been real thrilled. That phone call I would have gotten to the principal's office would not have been a fun one.
Yeah, no, that's not the place you want to wind up with either of those guys as your head coaches here. So, Byron, listen, we care about you here. Don't do this anymore here for your sake, for the team's sake, for everybody's sake. Now, Greg, you are joining us down from SEC Media Day here, and Greg Sankey, the conference commissioner, made a lot of headlines earlier in the day talking about the idea of not postponing games this upcoming season due to COVID-19 positives here. What did you take away from his overall statement on the SEC's policies relative to COVID-19 heading into the 21 season?
Well, it was not that dissimilar from what we heard from Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby last week. They were the first Power 5 conference to have media days. I guess I just was surprised to see so much conversation centering around vaccination rates and stuff like that. That's all anyone's really talking about right now. And I do feel like both Bob Bowlsby and Greg Sankey essentially issued a challenge without literally issuing a challenge, saying, look, if you guys have COVID interruptions, it's because you either didn't do the vaccination or you chose not to do the vaccination, whatever your choice may be. And if for whatever reason you miss a game because of that, then that's your choice. And that's the risk you take. So basically not forcing anybody, but basically laying out saying, hey, there's not going to be the same wiggle room we had last year. We now were able to thread the needle last year, and it was far from ideal, but it was good enough. Now we have pieces in place to be able to get through this thing relatively unscathed. And if you're less than 100% because guys chose not to get vaccinated, then that's the choice of the players, and that's the circumstances that you'll have to deal with. So it's been interesting to see how much of the conversation is centering around that. But I can't imagine that's going to stop with any of the media days that are coming up over the next couple weeks.
So the messaging from the top is clear, right? It's get vaccinated. This is your path to least resistance. But what is it from the standpoint, what is the tone of the coaches, Greg? Like, what are they sort of speaking to as far as what their mindset is entering the season, especially relative to vaccination?
Well, I think every coach, and it's always now, it's always about player empowerment. And that's really been such a huge move over the last several years, whether it's freedom of transfer without penalty, which has been instituted. Now it's name, image, and likeness, which has been instituted. Players have become more empowered than ever before, and I don't think that's turning away. The players are also empowered as to whether or not they want to get the vaccine. If they want to, they can. If they don't want to, they don't have to. But the coaches, I do think, are laying out, hey, if you do, and last year a lot of players dealt with anxiety, and I'm sure Golic will tell you, anyone that worked in college football will tell you, it was one of the most mentally draining years for coaches and players because of the stress of potentially receiving a positive test on Saturday morning or on Friday night, and putting in a whole week's worth of work only to be sidelined for 2 weeks. That's heartbreaking. It cost Trevor Lawrence a Heisman. I mean, a lot of people thought he would have won it. He got COVID, had to miss 2 weeks. Next thing you know, he went from first by a wide margin to a distant third or fourth and kind of an afterthought for the award. So it's obviously one of those, and the players dealt with it, and it was challenging. And I don't think very many players are going to want to deal with that again. Now, everyone feels their own way about the vaccine. A lot of players don't want to get it. A lot of players feel like they need to, feel like they should, feel like they will. But I think the coaches aren't necessarily going to force the player's hand, because that would be a step back in player empowerment. So I think it's a difficult line to walk for some of these coaches. I think a lot of them would love to say, hey, everyone go get vaccinated. We don't need distractions. But they don't want to do that, because that could backfire in a locker room full of a bunch of guys that might not want to get the vaccine.
Janae Engel, Jr. here on ESPN Radio, talking to ESPN college football analyst and national champion Greg McElroy on the Goodyear Hotline. And Greg, in all of that, the player empowerment, the NIL conversation, I think what's been lost in that as we head towards the football portion of thing is, at your alma mater, what's on the line coming up now this year? Bryce Young getting set to take over after two straight first-round quarterbacks here, a guy that I feel like a lot of the outside world doesn't know a ton about right now. So how are you feeling about Bryce Young taking the reins at this all-important position in Alabama heading into 2021?
Well, and quarterback play has not really been a problem at Alabama for quite a while. And the last time they had any semblance of quarterback controversy was in 2016. They started a guy named Blake Barnett, who was highly touted out of California, really had a bad first half of football. They decided to go with Jalen Hurts in the second half, and the rest is history. So this has not always been a clear-cut decision in the preseason, but I think most people that are close to the program would tell you that Bryce Young has a pretty significant lead over all the other players that are vying for the spot. He's a talented guy, was one of the highest recruited players out of California a couple years ago, very athletic, extremely athletic, can move on a dime, and is really accurate throwing it down the field. So he's got the pedigree, but like you guys know, man, no one really knows what you have until you go out there and get hit. How do you bounce back from that hit? And how do you play when bullets are flying around you? And I think that's the one thing that everyone is still kind of wondering. When the lights get bright and the pressure gets big, can you still respond and play within yourself? And I think most people feel real confident that Bryce Young can do that, because he's going to be surrounded by a really talented group of players. And he has former head coach in the NFL, Bill O'Brien, calling the plays. So I think most people are really bullish on what he could become. And I can understand why, given just the talent level that he has and the dual threat capabilities he has with extending plays with his legs.
Yeah, good reminder for anyone that checked out after January here. Steve Sarkisian now coaching a team in Burnt Orange out there in Texas. And Bill O'Brien gets to come down here and enter the program of the offensive coordinator for Alabama that usually lands you a head coach job somewhere else real soon. You guys, make sure to check out Mac and Cube, 7 to 10 a.m. weekdays on WJOX 94.5 FM. We've got Cole Kublik on there, Greg McElroy. It's a great time with both. Enjoy media day, Greg. We'll talk to you soon, buddy, all right?
All right, sounds good, buddy.
All right, SEC media. Like you said, hardly any football getting talked about right now, because everyone's still trying to figure out what effect this virus is going to have on the upcoming season.
Yeah, no, and that, beyond the fact that we talked about one quarterback situation, there's another one in LSU still brewing, and a little bit of a two-man race there. So a lot to unfold, but there's still so much that will precede that discussion before we even get to kickoff.
Exactly. So lots to have happen before we get to that point. But coming up next, that's stuff for the fall. That's when we get to training camps here. We still have to put a bow on what has been a hot girl summer for the ages, and we will do that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. Our thanks to Trevor Scales, co-host of Sports Nation, hanging out with us in here yet again here. Trev, always a pleasure having
pleasure
you come by, man.
It's all mine, big dog, as always, man. Appreciate y'all having me come through, drop a little knowledge, and have a little fun at the same time.
We also had Zora Stevenson come by here, Bally Sports Wisconsin, reporter covering the Bucks. Sean Evans, the host of Hot Ones on YouTube. The folks at Complex, again, kind enough to water my eyes with some sauce during the break on this show.
Clear out your sinuses.
And, of course, Greg McElroy, our ESPN college football analyst. You missed any of those conversations and want to check them out here, wherever you get your podcast, Chinay and Golic Jr. Download, subscribe, rate, review, all those good things while you are there. Now, in the meantime, we have said we have digested wings. We have gone above and beyond a day. So we have done our best to lift you out of the Mondays here. Let's bring it home as we keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Jhené and Golic Jr.
Keeping that same energy, Trev, we talked about this in the world of the NFL not too long ago here, and a pretty powerful moment now in the NHL. Nashville Predators prospect Luke Prokop on Monday became the first active player under an NHL contract to come out as gay. He's 19-year-old. He made the statement on Instagram saying, quote, "It's been quite a journey to get to this point in my life, but I could not be happier with my decision to come out. From a young age, I've dreamed of being an NHL player, and I believe that living my authentic life will allow me to bring my whole self to the rink and improve my chances of fulfilling that dream."
19 years old was my first takeaway. Second takeaway was later on in that statement. He said something that my agents and family and friends already knew about me, which brings full circle to the effect that, listen, folks that are gay, that are walking around in this world, only have an obligation to come out that are close to them. If they choose to loop you into this conversation, it's a beautiful thing. You should consider it a privilege.
It should. And because this is something, a person's sexuality, again, should not matter. Be the conversation. Yeah. Who you choose to share those intimate moments with shouldn't be public knowledge, but we know and we heard, we went through this last time talking about this in the NFL, messages like this can help so many people who are struggling, which was still a tough thing to share with the rest of the world, and that is why we got to celebrate these moments. So congrats to Luke on his decision to come out to share his part, that part of himself with the rest of us here in the world. Jhené and Golic Jr. keeping that same energy here. Heading over to Major League Baseball, you remember this scene that we saw over the weekend. The fan who hit Red Sox left fielder Alex Verdugo with a baseball thrown from the Yankee Stadium stands has now been banned for life from every Major League stadium and attending every Major League game. I still would like him brought down to the outfield where he's forced to square up and answer for his crimes, but I understand that we're not supposed to hit the fans. So.
I mean, to an extent, if you want to run the ones, we can get this work done, don't you mind? Like, I still believe that it should be done. Like, no, go ahead, get him out of the paint, but also run the ones before you do.
Yeah, it just, it's not a thing we got to keep having happen. You can only use the excuse to being cooped up at home. Like, that wasn't ever an excuse that was really viable.
Correct.
Quite frankly, like, you knew you were acting out sideways here.
Find some act right at some home training, please. All of you.
Just figure it out, man. Stop doing wild stuff like this and just enjoy getting to be outside, hanging out with our friends, watching sports again. Like, we got nice things back. Don't screw this up. Don't screw it up for the rest of us here.
We know what it's like when it gets taken away. It's terrible.
Oh, this MLB weekend recap is brought to you by Credit Karma. Visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Credit Karma money, progress starts here. But now let's end on a celebratory note here, because the SI Swimsuit Edition came out here, and we got another one of those fun firsts in this conversation. Megan Thee Stallion lands herself on the cover of the SI Swimsuit Edition here. She made history. She became the first female rapper to end up on the cover for this magazine, which she told people was special because her first memory of the magazine was Tyra Banks, who became the first black woman to snag a solo cover back in, I believe, 1997. So Meg, who's had a banner year in so many ways professionally, just continues to go ahead and stack it.
Man, so you go Megan Thee Stallion this year. Beyonce was back in 07, I believe, and you mentioned Tyra Banks back in 1997, black woman gracing that cover. And I just think if you fix your lips to criticize the idea of her being on the cover, reprioritize your life, just generally speaking. Just generally speaking.
What, people are getting mad about the weirdest stuff right now. This is the thing that's going to make you upset? You say Naomi Osaka and Megan Thee Stallion on the cover and you want to have problems with the situation here? The world's got bigger problems. Look outside.
Correct. Ones that are affecting you. There was an ocean on fire.
On literal fire. But because people want to celebrate their bodies and take pictures by the ocean, now you're mad?
Ridiculous.
No, fix your life. Fix everything involved in that. We on this show continue to celebrate Hot Girl Summer in all its various forms and fashions here.
Hey.
Own your moment. Meg, we're very proud of you, friend of the program who's never been on the program but has
always
an open invite to be on the program anytime that she is looking for there. So that's how we stick the dismount on this one here. Stick around next. We will see if Spain and Fitz can continue the Hot Girl Summer coming up on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Jhené and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.